They say it works when you work it, you know, and that we can only keep what we have by giving it away. Check it out.
Y'all ready for an AA meeting?
Yeah.
Thank you. My name is Misty, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
Welcome to the Monday night Blue Chip Speaker Meeting here at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org desperately in need will hear our speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too, and I must have this thing. Tonight, all the way from the primetime group, is Mr. Robert J. We go back a long way.
Ain't that right, Robert?
We'll see. Hello, everyone. My name is Robert J., and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is January the 6th, 2014. Tonight, I'm going to tell my story, and I want to thank Lisa for giving me the opportunity to come over here to this fabulous group, and I'll tell my story. And you actually caught me at a pretty good time, really, because I'm trying to write my story now to either have it printed in the Grapevine or printed in the 6th edition of the Big Book. I'm not trying to rewrite the book or anything for you Big Book thumpers. I just want my story in there, all right? Again, my name is Robert J., and I'm an alcoholic. Now, let me do a little house cleaning here to start off with. As a friend of mine might say, if you don't have a sponsor, you might want to get one. And if you have a sponsor, you might want to call him or her. I'm not one of those alcoholics that got one of those sad stories. I enjoyed my drinking career. I had a good time. I'm not one of those alcoholics that would say that my worst day in AA was better than my best day in my addiction. I had a lot of good drinking time. It wasn't all good, but most of it was. I didn't never have any kind of consequence that made me want to come in this room. I did come to AA under the lash of alcoholism. That wasn't none of me. I loved my drinking. I didn't come to AA because it was the last house on the block, as a lot of people say. I came here because I chose this house. I had reservations. I was going back out. I didn't have to stay here. I wasn't through drinking. But I always say to myself, it doesn't matter how you get here, as long as you get here. That's the main thing. I was one of those high bottom drunks that they had to raise the bottom up to get to me. So I was not ready to come in here because AA had nothing to offer me. Now, let me tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Don't forget, I loved my drinking career because I thought there were no consequences. I had no consequences. This was my world and my drinking career. I was born August 2nd, 1951 in Shreveport, Louisiana. I'm the second child of 6 children. To start, I don't remember. I have no memories about anything from the time I was born until I reached the first grade. I have no memory. When people tell me that they remember I did this when I was 2 years old, I can't relate to them. I have no memory at all. The only thing I remember was about the first grade, and that was my teacher's name, and her name was Miss Wallet. I blanked out again. I just didn't remember any of these things, right? I was in school and things was happening, but I just don't remember. I should have said something was wrong with me right then. But I came back in when I was about in the third grade, and I recall my mother and a sister that was a year older than me showing up. Now, my father, biological father, I saw him a couple of times, and he took me to meet some more of my siblings, and I met his grandmother. And that was about the end of that. I was told he got killed driving from Shreveport to Houston, drunk driving. So I didn't see him anymore. But my mother married a guy that was in the Air Force, and he was stationed at Andrews Air Force Base in Washington, D.C. So we moved to Crisfield, Maryland. And we moved to Crisfield, Maryland. It was cold there. Me and all my sister love cold weather. It was too cold there, so my sister and I went back home to Shreveport, Louisiana, to live with our grandparents and two aunts. Now, during this time, I was a good student. I was a good child. I tried to be the best to do the right thing in life so they would love me. I wanted all my family to love me. But I had low self-esteem. I always thought I wasn't good enough. I tried to stay in the shadows, never in the forefront. I went to school and was a pretty good student. Now, back in my days, you had AB class, AB students in one section, C, D, and the other one, and then L. All the pretty girls always was in the AB section. So I had to do my work to stay in the AB section to keep up with them. My first experience of tasting alcohol or liquor was at a very young age. My aunt, I had two aunts, and they used to love to have parties. And they would give us some liquor every now and then, just a taste. You know, they like to see us dance and act a fool, and they laugh and everything. It was a good time. So we enjoyed that. I started to drink on my own and a lot by the time I reached high school. See, I was one of those little guys. I never did get over 120 pounds when I was in high school from the whole time I graduated. And back then, I wanted to play basketball and I wanted to play football. But back then, if you went out for a sport and you were small, the big boys would abuse you. That's what their intentions were. They abuse you. So I really didn't play any sports. I would have a little bit of alcohol, nothing major, just enough to fit in with the crowd. By the 11th grade, I was drinking a little more than my average classmates. Now, during this time in the 11th grade, I'm going to come back to this in a few minutes, but I met this young lady in the 11th grade. And we really kind of hit it off together. We thought loved each other, all right? But we'll get back to her. I graduated from high school, but I knew that if I stayed home, I would do nothing but drink even more. I knew that I was going to be one of those guys around the barrel throwing that wood in the fire. See, I knew I was going to be one of those guys if I would have stayed at home. I had no ambitions to be nothing, though. I never did thought I wanted to be a fireman, police, doctor. None of those things crossed my mind. I never thought I wanted to go to college. Even though I went to college a lot, you know, I just didn't go to no classes. That was doing football season, see. We had a good time there. So I'm here in Shreveport, and I know that if I stay here, I'm only going to be an alcoholic. I'm going to be one of them low-bottoms. So I decided to go to Los Angeles, California, to live with my uncle. I had plenty of relatives in California. Back in the days, everybody used to leave Louisiana and go west. We would go to Texas, California. So I moved out there, and I thought that would help me kind of curb my drinking a little bit. You know, that's all I wanted to do, curb it. I wasn't ready to stop, just curb it a little bit. I was enjoying it. Slowly, alcohol creeped into my life again. My uncle drank, and everybody else that drank around the house. Well, he had to look in the house, and he didn't mind me drinking. Matter of fact, I was a running partner at times. He would take me to the script joint so me and him could drink together. So I liked it there. But what happened? Alcohol again came up and I couldn't control it anymore. I said, got to be L.A. now. I wasn't Shreveport. I couldn't do nothing there. So I moved to Los Angeles. I still can't handle it in Los Angeles. I'm getting rough. So what I do? After spending about a year there, I was drinking more, but I thought I could escape it. So I went back to Shreveport, Louisiana, joined the Army. They'll help me out. They'll straighten me out. They'll stop me from drinking. Yes, I thought that would help me change my drinking habits. The Army increased my drinking habits. From the time I reached basic training, I met this sergeant. I met a sergeant that was in basic training, and he had just got back from Vietnam, and they didn't have no place for him to go, so they sent him to our unit. And me and the sergeant got to be good friends. So he could have that 2.0 beer, and he had a TV in his room. So me and him would go drink, and he would stop me from going anywhere. I didn't never go to the field with all the rest of the guys. I didn't go to the gas chamber. I didn't go to the rifle range. I didn't do none of that stuff. I was living a good life in the Army. I know y'all Army guys don't say something about this. Nobody would say anything to me because they were scared of what the sergeant would do to them. So they would go out of all these places. When they come back, I'd be laying up on my bunk and took my shower. I'm laying up there in my underwear and I'm enjoying myself, maybe reading a book or something. Drinking had become part of my life and I liked it. In basic training, when I got ready to graduate from basic training, I did nothing in basic training that the average soldier did. But when I graduated, they promoted me. They promoted me in basic training. They gave me a sharpshooter medal. They gave me ribbons. They gave me everything. And everybody in the platoon was sitting up saying, how in the blank he getting anything? He did nothing. After basic training, they sent me to Fort Belvoir for some training. I was a generator operator. They sent me to Fort Belvoir, and I still don't know where Fort Belvoir is. I don't know whether it's in West Virginia or Virginia. I don't know. But I stayed there for about 6 weeks, and it was cold out there, too. And I just don't like cold weather, people. I think it made me drink more. I'm not. So when I leave Fort Belvoir, what did they send me in? California. Oh, Lord. What more can I ask for? I'm going to California again. But this time, I was stationed in Malibu. I was stationed in a MASH unit. You know, it wasn't about maybe 60 to 80 of stationed there. I knew nothing about getting a haircut. I knew nothing about wearing spit shine boots. I knew nothing about putting my uniform in the cleaners. I put my uniform in the washer, then in the dryer, then I put it on. The Army was where I need. We didn't follow hardly any Army rules. No spit shine boots, no starched uniform, and drinking was part of my day every day. There wasn't about 60 to 80 men there. We were stationed up on the top of a mountain. Mountain was right at 3 miles high. So what they would do is that we had the Malibu Beach right up under the mountain. So they would tell me, say, Johnson, we only want you up here for an inspection. Because your hair too long. You ain't going to do the right thing. So you're just going down to the beach. So I'd go down to the beach. I'd stay down there till all the inspections were open. I was stationed there for about 14 months. What happened there? Well, before I left there, they sent me to Allentown, Pennsylvania. I got there. They wanted me to go there for 3 or 4 weeks to get some training. So I go to Allentown, Pennsylvania, and when I get there, I'm in formation, and the CO comes up to me and look at me, and he say, Johnson, get out of my formation, and don't you ever come back until you get a haircut. I wouldn't get no haircut, so I just left the formation. I went down to the NCO club. I goes in the NCO club, and who's there? The first sergeant. The first sergeant tells me, he said, Johnson, you know what you need to do? Go down to that Wag Bear's and have one of them sisters tweed your hair. He just wanted it off your ear. So I went down to the Wag Bear's, and one of the girls braided my hair. Two braids on each side. I go back to formation the next day. CO come up and look at me, and he say, Johnson, don't never come back to my formation. That was good with me. I ain't had to get up in the morning to go to formation. All I did was get up and go to class. I ain't here for a couple of weeks. No way I'm going back to my unit. So I gets back to my unit in Malibu. I gets back to my unit in Malibu. And they got a new lieutenant there. So this lieutenant, he's following me around. This is the only fight I had while I was in the Army, all right? There wasn't no other fights in the Army. The lieutenant was following me around, telling me to get a haircut. Just telling me to get a haircut. And every time he'd tell me, all the other guys around me would be laughing because they knew I wasn't getting no haircut. So he'd be up to me every day telling me, go get a haircut. I said, well, all right, then. If you want me to go get a haircut, I'm going to get a haircut. I said, you take me. So he said, get in the Jeep. Let's go get a haircut. So, all right. We go down in L.A. to Fort MacArthur. And we go to the barber shop. And when we get to the barber shop, he said, the barber, Kate Baldwin, said, I have a seat. So before I have a seat, I tell the barber, I say, look, I'm not going to pay you for a haircut. Look at me kind of strange. Then he look at the lieutenant. And the lieutenant say, Johnson, get in the seat. I said, okay. But I'm telling you right now, I'm not going to pay you for the haircut. I get in the seat, and he cuts my hair. And I get up, and I start to walk off, and he grabbed me. The bottle grabbed me. Me and him start tussling right then. The lieutenant separated us, and he said, Johnson, pay him. I said, I told both of y'all before I sit in that chair, I wasn't paying for no haircut. Go out to the Jeep. I don't know, out to the Jeep. I don't know how they handled that. All right, I was there for about 14 months, you know, having my good time. And me and a couple of friends of mine, we went down in Hollywood one time. We go down in Hollywood to enjoy ourselves. And so we goes in this club. And one of my friends, he was a little bit too young. He had no business in the club. So I goes in the back door, and I open the back door and let him in. When I open the back door, alarm goes off. So they come up there and put all three of us out. We go ride around, and the unmarked police car stopped us. And we already drunk, and they smoking, and we having a good time. They take all us out of the car, like somebody must have told them on us or something. We sit out in the car, and they take us all out, and they say, we all drunk, and they know we're drunk. So they say, well, where's the registration to the car yet? So the guy said, it's in the glove compartment. So the police opened up the glove compartment. I don't know, but see, y'all might be a little bit too young for this, but back in the days, they were selling lids of reefer. They were selling that in these baggies. You get a four-finger lid, a reefer. So when the police opened up the glove compartment, the reefer fell out. So they take all three of us to jail. So we're saying, well, we'll be out as soon as we call the fort, and they'll come down here and get us. It was a holiday, Labor Day. What they say? Nah, ain't nobody coming down there getting y'all until the holiday over with. So we thought we'd be smart. We'd hire us a civilian lawyer, let him come down there and get us. We'd go out and finish our drinking for the rest of the holiday, then we'd show back up that money. Civilian lawyer told us we can't touch y'all. They got a military hold on y'all. So y'all got to stay. So we stayed for them 3 days. They came down and got us that money or Tuesday or sometime. We goes back and they tell us to pack up all y'all stuff, so y'all got to go. Go where? We had top secret clearances. We was in a Nike site where they shoot these missiles off and stuff in. We was up there. So they say, y'all got to go. Y'all can't stay here because we're taking y'all top secret clearance. So you got to go. Where we going at? They sent us to Santa Monica Beach. Nobody down there. They tell us just to do extra duty. We stay down there for 2 weeks just drinking and having a good time. What we do? After 2 weeks, they give us orders. They tell us that we're going to Vietnam. Sure, they want to see Vietnam. They send us to Oakland Army Base. When we get to Oakland Army Base, they take our orders. They say, we're not sending anybody to Vietnam anymore. They say, we're trying to get people out of Vietnam. We're not sending anybody anymore. Give me y'all orders. They took our orders. They came back a couple of days later and asked us, say, where y'all want to go at? Well, when you go into the Army, they always give you something called a dream sheet. Where you pick where you want to go at. So we thought they were still doing the same thing. So one of my friends said Thailand. One said Japan. And I said Hawaii. 2 weeks later, they came back and gave us our orders. You go to Thailand, you go to Japan, and I'm going to Hawaii. Good times. The Army was good for me, all right? It was good for me. I enjoyed these times. I go to Hawaii, and time I get to Hawaii, the first person that I meet, me and him went to school together. And he's one of the biggest dope dealers over there. What a lucky break. So my drinking was on again. We drank with no consequences. I never had any consequences. No matter where I was at, I never had consequences for drink. It was always good time for me. After being in Hawaii for a little while, my sergeant knew that I had a drinking problem. So he said, I'll tell you what, Johnson, we're going to put you on these anabuse pills. And it wasn't AA class they sent me to, but they were sending me to a class. I don't know what it was. That didn't last very long. I go to the NCO club. And I see a fellow friend over there that's supposed to be taking the same class that I'm taking. And he's drinking. Man, how you doing that? Oh, man, you don't swallow them pills, man. Shoot. You take them, put them up under your tongue, take some water and swallow that down. When you get outside, spit the pill out. Oh, yeah, that sounds good to me. That was good. So I was having a good time in the Army. Now, that young lady I tell you about, I met in the 11th grade. She was keeping in contact with me during this whole time. So I went home on a 30-day leave, and me and her got together. And she told me, said, well, if you don't marry me now, when you come back, I'm going to be gone. So I said, okay. I took her back to Hawaii with me. And we got married. Had a good time. Nice wedding. Had a good time. But it didn't last long. It started cutting into my drinking time, took my money. I had to get an apartment. I had to start paying bills, the light bill, the water bill, the gas bill. I can't do all that. Just gave me responsibilities that I never wanted. I didn't want no responsibilities. I didn't want them either. They gave me responsibilities that I never had. I didn't like it cutting into my drinking and partying time. Now I had to take care of a wife. My marriage lasted about 12 months. One day I came home and told my wife I wasn't ready for marriage. And she looked at me like something was wrong with me. But I told her, you need to go back home. The end of that month when I got paid, I came and bought her an airplane ticket. You can go home now. I'm through with you. I ain't ready to be married. I get an airplane and go home now. I ain't ready with this. She goes home. When she goes home, a friend of mine moves in the apartment with me now. One of my drinking partners. Everything was cool. Then we shared everything. Split everything down the middle. See? Everything was cool. That kind of fizzled out too. I was working at the motor pool with the sergeant. I was supposed to have been on guard at the desk, right? When I go on guard at the desk, I go in and change my clothes, put on my civvies, and I'm going to the club over here from Air Force Base. Guy come up and ask me around about, I guess it must have been around about 12:30. And he come up and tell me, he said, hey, man, first sergeant been riding around there looking for you. Well, I might as well stay here until the club close. I'll see him in the morning. So he pulls up on me in the morning, and I'm sitting up there with my feet all propped up and everything. And he said, Johnson, come on over to the office when you get through off duty. All right, then. I get over to the office. Where you been all night, Johnson? Shoot, I've been working all night. I've been walking through the barracks. I've been checking the barracks. Only time I left my duty was to go sit down in my car and eat my lunch. That's the only time I left. Johnson, you know you're lying. Sir, I would not tell you a lie. So, they're going to give me an Article 15. Article 15, that was all right. They were just going to fine me money. But they called my motor pool sergeant in. And they asked my motor pool sergeant, do you think we ought to take a stripe from him? And my polar pool said, yeah, take a stripe from him, shoot. He did that all the time he'd been here. Take a stripe. So he said, all right, we're going to take a stripe and we're going to find you. So I tell him, all of them in front of the CO, I said, look at him. I'm not working for him anymore. I'm not going down that motor pool anymore. The CO looked at me and said, what do you mean, Johnson? You're in the United States Army. You do what we tell you to do. Not me. He said, what are you going to do? I said, I don't know. I found out something. I goes over to the NCO club, and the mess sergeant is there. That me and him drink. I've been drinking at his house and everything. Me and him good friends. We've been drinking together. So I tell him, I said, tell him about my problems and everything, and I tell him, look, I want to be a cook. So we sat there and had a couple more drinks, and we had a good time, and then he tell me, oh, you really want to be a cook? Yeah, I want to be a cook, man. Then he kicked me out the motor pool. Oh, all right, then I go tell the CO tomorrow. So he go tell the CO that, I'm going to be a cook. So the CO said, all right, then we're going to put him somewhere. So what I do, they send me to cook school. I come back from cook school 2 months later. I'm telling the sergeant I need my stripe back. So we drinking, friend. Why here? I never go get my stripe back. So he goes over to the CO. Tell the CO, look here, Johnson's doing a heck of a job over there. He needs his stripe back. The CO called me in and said, Johnson, you must be a good ASS kisser. How in the world? We just took the stripe from you and somebody already back over and talking about you. I said, look, I'm a hard worker. I'm a hard worker. So we used to go over to Hickam, because Hickam was where all the nice girls were sent over to Hickam, all the nice women, the Air Force Base. Yeah, they was over there at the Air Force Base. They didn't want to mess with us Army boys and the Marines and stuff. They didn't want to mess with us over there. So we'd go over there all the time. One night I goes over there, and I had about 3 guys with me, and a friend of mine drove up, and we always mess with the women all the time. So we walked around the club, so I asked him, I said, which woman do you want? So he picks out one. He said, which one you want? So I picks out one. So the club closed, and all the young ladies are still, because we drank good over there, see. And if you ran with us, the ladies never had to buy any liquor. If you ran with us, you know. I picked out a young lady. He picked out one. So I told him, I said, I'll meet you down in the pineapple field with these women. So I tell him, you take my friends, you take our friends, the guys, you take them on over back over to the post over there at Schofield. And I'll take the young ladies, and I'll meet you down in the pineapple field. When the 2 ladies that we had, both of them got into my car, but then a 3rd one jumped into my car. There were 3 of them. We riding down the highway, and I'm taking my hand, the one up in the front with me. I'm rubbing thighs and everything. I'm having it done. I slows up to turn over in the pineapple field. She jumps out of my car. When she jumped out, the 2 in the back jumped out. I'm pleading then. Look, I'm going to take y'all wherever y'all want to go. One of them goes in the back. They already knew me. They knew everything about me. It was different. But one of them goes in the back, get my tag number. Then they flag down another car, and they go on post. I guess that's where they went in. The next day around, about 10 ladies came up there. And I was in the back. And somebody said, Johnson, they asking for you. So I just goes out the back door and get in my car and go home. The next lady come back up there again. So I said, look, I'll talk to a couple of y'all. So 2 of them came in the mess hall, and I sit down and talk to them. They started talking to the older one. Yeah, you sound like a real nice guy. Yeah, I'm good, too. But I didn't know. See, I had an appointment off post, and I had a room on post. But when they told me where they lived at, they only live a mile from where my apartment was at. And they telling me to come down there, we gonna drink together and all this good stuff. I said no. So they went over to my commander, and they told my commander that I had tried to rape them. That was a bad spot. But I'm gonna tell him, how in the world I'm gonna rape 3 women? That don't make no sense. When Johnson, that's what they say. So you're going to have to stand charges. Now, I don't know why they didn't go to Hawaii police and report me in. They reported me in on post. Say, I got to leave Hawaii. Anybody been to Hawaii, you might know that. All right, a couple of days later, 2 of these big Samoans came up there. Samoans don't play, all right? I knew it was time for me to leave Hawaii then. So I got ready to go. Somebody told me, say, go down there and talk with the chaplain. And tell the chaplain that your mother is sick. You haven't saw her in years. and you need to go home where she's at. I go down to the chaplain crying like a baby. I talk to him, tell him how sick my mother is, I need to go home. He said, dial your mama number, let me call and talk to her. He called my mother, and he told my mother and him talking. She said, Johnson, you going home. I said, well, all right then. I get ready. I don't know anybody in the Army. You know, after you start clearing, getting ready to leave, you have to clear post. You have to clear everybody. Everybody have to sign your sheet before you can go. So everybody signed my sheet except the first sergeant. So I go to the first sergeant, ask him to sign my sheet. He said, Johnson, you ain't going nowhere. He called Captain, the commander in, and said, no, you're going to stay here and face these charges, Johnson. Look, I can't rape three women. I don't care how you put this. So I went back down to the chaplain, and I told the chaplain again. He said, Johnson, don't worry. You're going home. We're getting you a 60-day drop, so you can go home. So I said, all right. I went back to the first sergeant. First sergeant said, Johnson, I told you I'm not signing these papers. So, all right, I go back down to the chaplain, tell the chaplain. The chaplain comes up there. He called the commander, and he called the first sergeant in the office, and they stayed in there for about 15 minutes, and they called me in. First sergeant signed his papers. Let him go. First sergeant signed my papers. I had a nice car. I really liked that car. I drove that car to the airport, and I left it there. I got on my plane and left. I came home to Shreveport. They had gave me orders, as a matter of fact, to come to Georgia. I didn't even know where Georgia was at. A friend of mine from South Carolina had to tell me where Georgia was at on the map. I didn't even know where it was at. But when I got there, my wife, she was still my wife then. We hadn't got divorced yet. She wanted to get back with me and come to Georgia with me. And I said, okay. I said, I'll send for you as soon as I get up there. So I get to Georgia. I don't know whether y'all know anything about Savannah and Fort Stewart. I thought I was going to be stationed in Savannah. But this was back in the 70s. They sent me down to Fort Stewart. Nothing down there but woods. That's all. Nothing else. Nothing but woods. Good bootleg houses, and the bootleg houses are always open. Always open now. Good bootleg houses. So what I did was I sent for her, and back in the days, I don't know how they did. Back in the days, I was an E-404, so I had all the rights of a sergeant. So when I came in, what they told me, when I went down to the chaplain again, because I told them I couldn't stay down in Hinesville, I told them they're going to have to send me to Hunter Army Field. They were just opening up. They said, well, you're going to be one of the first people to go to Hunter Army Field. Okay, I might be. This. They had lights up there now in Savannah. Shoot. I go to Savannah. In Savannah, I got privileges, so I didn't have to pay for a house. I just went on post and got a house. So me and my wife moved in the house. You know, back then, the rank I had, let me get a house. But, again, it just didn't work out. Even though the house was, when it was free, because they were paying me quarters, so it was free for me, but it still didn't work out for me. So I had to send her back home again. But this time I sent her home for good. That was it. I continued to drink and I had a good time. During this time in Savannah, I got to speed it up a little bit. I found this young lady in Savannah. She had a lot of friends and all of them drank just like me. So I love it. I was just at home again. I was about to get out of the Army and I wanted to move in with her. But she told me, said, you can't move in with me unless you get a divorce. Let's get a divorce then. Back in the days, I don't really still have it. All you had to do was print it in the newspaper. And if they didn't complain again, you get your divorce. So I put it in the newspaper. So we had a divorce. Me and her got married, too. We got married and we bought our first house. Now, we had a party house. I mean, all I did was party. I don't care how many houses I ever had. I always had bars in my house. And my bar was my priority. That was my first thing to get. Liquor filling my bar up. All the other stuff came sucking for me. That was kind of like what it was like, all right? Good time, enjoyed everything. Let me tell you what happened, a little bit about what happened. I soon started blacking out. And it started happening more and more. I didn't remember anything. You know, I just black out, sure. I wanted to control my drinking by then. I think it was about time then. They had asked me that I want to go back on abuse. But I told them that's supposed to be private. That was supposed to be left in Hawaii. How y'all know I was on abuse? I don't want to go on abuse. But I told them, I said, look here, I don't want to take no abuse, and I'm going to just have a good time, all right? So this time, I didn't want to stop drinking, but my daughter was raised up with this other guy's daughter. They was raised up. They went to elementary school, high school, college. They all went together. And I would go down in Albany where she was going to school there, and her and this other girl had a room together. When the other girl's daddy was in the program, she had double digits, figures in the program back then. So she tell me, say, because, you know, I didn't care whether you drink or not. I'm going to drink my liquor. But I tell him, I'm going to drink my liquor. I didn't disrespect him and everything, you know. She told me, said, why don't you talk to him for a minute? Maybe he can help you. So I said, well, all right, then. So I talked to him, and shoot, he was a real alcoholic. Shoot. So he started coming, picking me up every day, taking me to the doggone meetings. But I tell him, look here, I don't need but one or two meetings, all right? I don't need all these meetings you're going to. Give me one or two meetings, that's it. I don't need all these meetings. I got enough. I knew something was wrong with him when one day he came, picked me up, and we were driving downtown. And it was raining cats and dogs. I mean, it was storming. I'm sitting up wondering, when is he going to turn around? He's just driving just like a sunshine. Look, I had a good time there. All my drinking was good. Look, let me hear. But I didn't know what was ahead, all the trials and the low spots that I had to go through. In 2020, my oldest daughter passed away. 2020, my oldest daughter passed away from overdose of prescription drugs. But that didn't make me start back drinking. I had so many people to come by my house. I mean, people that I didn't even know came by my house and bringing me food and talking to me and telling me to go to a meeting with them. So I was good with that. Then, in 2021, my wife passed away. I've been married 45 years. COVID got her, and she passed away. But my daughter, my two grandchildren, my higher power, and the people in this program, that's what I always say, the program is good, but it's no more than what the people make of it. They keep talking about the newcomer is the most important person in here, but if we ain't giving the newcomer what they need, the newcomer's no good. It's our job to give the newcomer what he needs. And now, what is it like now? I became the GSR for my first group, the New Rush Hour group. I was saying the alternate, then I came to GSR. I work on the AA hotline. I was chairperson for a week in my group. I was chairperson every other month. Then I took meetings to the DUI court. Then I took meetings to the drug addiction clinic. And I take meetings to Georgia Regional Hospital. I carried AA message wherever I could. And I live AA. Could never repay me back for what I did, for what it's done for me. I love the program of AA, and I hope to carry this message and live this program the rest of my life. Very good program. I love it. I enjoy what I'm doing, so it ain't work no more for me. I enjoy it. Thank y'all for letting me share.
Can I get a hug?
Robert, I'm going to speak on behalf of the room. We thank you for your service, sir. And those pineapple fields in Wahiawa just so happened to be my literal backyard. I sure do. My literal backyard. So again, thank you so much. Lisa, thank you for the opportunity to be up here and do all the service work. I love it. Thank you so much. About the chips. Do you guys mind if I do it?
No.
All right. Thank you. Hi, my name is Misty, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. Here at the Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABBA Club, we give chips to donate our time and sobriety. So the first chip I'm going to offer you guys is a white chip. Is anybody brand new coming in? Anybody else for a white chip? How about 30 days? 60 days? Oh! Okay. 90 days? Oh, 6 months. Oh, yay! I love you. 9 months? Do we have a year? A year or multiple? Oh, woo! Well, look here. Well, look here. Nice shirt, by the way. tonight I have the pleasure of presenting this chip to my sponsor.
Oh.
Obviously she's, well, it's her story to tell, but anyway, when I first came into these rooms, well, here at the NABBA Club, I saw her. I saw this little woman bouncing all around, and I just so happened to be in search of a sponsor because I came from another town, and they told me that I had to find a sponsor here in Atlanta, which I didn't want to do. And I prayed to God and prayed to God and prayed to God. And every time I saw Alicia, like this little light shined every single where she went. I heard how many, at that time, it was like 20 to 29 years or something. And I was like, wow. And then I see her talking to every single human, and everybody loves Lisa. You know, everything that Lisa does, she has everything I want in AA. She's so involved. She'll give you the shirt off her back. She makes time for everybody. She is so down to earth. She is so humble. She got me digging in the big book. She's got me, like, really, really peeling back the layers and stuff. And no matter what, and I'm not an easy one to handle. And she does it. She does it with love, and she does it with everything she has. And she's never judged me, not once. Anyway, I'm going to let her tell her story, but this is for 30. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lisa, alcoholic.
Amen.
And thank you so much, Missy.
I love you.
I love you, too. This group is so important to me. It was kind of a God thing, the way I got involved with it a couple of years ago. And I especially love the newcomers that come in here, the ladies and the gentlemen. It's like catapulted my sobriety. Like really, really, really helped me get happy. I mean, sober is one thing, but happy and sober is something I haven't always had. I'm just gonna say thank you. I'm not gonna stay here a long time. I picked up a lot of chips last week. I really believe in service work. I believe in getting my sponsees involved in service work and my friends. Thank you.
I love you.
Now we're going to do this again. Okay. So now I'm giving Missy a...
Aww. Thank
Missy,
you.
Missy, Missy at first was very reluctant to the 12-step program. Yes. Like you. And so we tried the sponsorship thing. She wasn't really down with it. She was putting a lot of stuff before it. Didn't drink, but just put her job before it. And then she slowly came to and realized that it has to come first. And then she became more willing. And she does a lot of service for this group, which is wonderful. I just wish you sobriety in another day. Don't quit 5 minutes before your miracle.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I love you.
2 years. She got 30. I'm going to offer the white chip one more time.
Save your life.
Yes, thank you very much, because it just might save your life. And it's that important. Well, thank you very much. Thank God and your sponsor for the chips that you guys do hold. Okay, thank you one and all for joining the Blue Chip Speakers meeting tonight.
This song goes out to 12-steppers all around the world, as well as to those who have gone before us and those who may be on their way. They said work's when you work it, you know, and that we can only keep what we have by giving it away. Check it out. Okay, this song is going to help you with your evolution, only if you're sick and tired of the pollution. The steps that we take are all about solutions. They will even help you make your restitution. The steps can eliminate the negativity and at the same time accentuate the positivity. You may even comprehend the word serenity. Now we're gonna take the steps to our best ability. And the very first step is about a surrender. Hey, you may even be a first time offender, or you may be coming back from your last bender. But welcome to the club, you step and be a member. And step two, that's a power that restores sanity. It's greater than your stuff, it's not about your vanity. Don't forget about the pain that brought you calamity. Now you owe it to yourself to take responsibility. When we get to step three, it's time to make a decision for our will and lives to undergo a revision. No longer do we have to feel a sense of division. We're on a new journey, so watch out for collision. Steps one, two, and three helps you build a foundation. But don't forget to cancel all reservations. Welcome to your new life, here's your invitation. But more will be revealed, what a revelation. Come on. When we take a step to learn to free our minds. Come on. We practice principles so we can redesign. Come on. We keep it real simple, just a day at a time. Come on. We wake up in the morning and we're ready to shine. Hey. It's a natural high, and that's a matter of fact. Come on. We know deep inside there's nothing we lack. Come on. We live in the moment, cause that's where it's at. Come on. It works when you're working, so keep coming back. Hey. And step four is where you're gonna take your inventory. Now we're looking for the truth, not for fame and glory. Just put it down on paper, there's no need to worry. It won't be very long before you tell your story. And step five, take your fourth step and share it with another. Chances are you did some harm to your sister and your brother. The same thing goes for your father and your mother. Now we're living in the light, we're not hiding undercover. Step six is how we deal with our character defects. No longer are we twisted, now we're coming correct. We're building character and we can feel the effect. Now we have a second chance, so get ready, get set. In the seventh step, we learn about humility. We recognize our shortcomings and we find stability. But we gotta keep it real and keep it in reality. That's why we take the steps to our best ability. Come on. When we take the steps, we learn to free our minds. Come on. We practice principles so we can redesign. Come on. We keep it real simple, just a day at a time. Come on. We wake up in the morning and we're ready to shine. Hey. It's a natural high, and that's a matter of fact. Come on. We know deep inside there's nothing we lack. Come on. We live in the moment, cause that's where it's at. Come on. It works when you're working, so keep coming back. Hey. And step eight, we make a list of the ones we did harm to. We're cleaning up the past cause it's something we must do. It takes willingness and we suggest you follow through. What you're about to do is gonna change your point of view. Now in the ninth step, it's time to mend some fences. We step up to the plate about our past offenses. If we're gonna make it right, we drop all defenses. By now we have begun to regain our senses. The tenth step is all about the application, so that we can learn to face any situation. Remember that it's not about a graduation. You know the tenth step is really a continuation. Step 11, we begin to practice meditation. It guides us through the world like a navigation, and we're not afraid to ask for the inspiration. But we gotta keep it moving, there's no hesitation. In step 12, we practice principles in all our affairs. We try to be of help, especially when we share. Now we're living consciously, we are awake and aware. So take this message to another, let them know that you care. Come on. When we take the steps, we learn to free our minds. Come on. We practice principles so we can redesign. Come on. We keep it real simple, just a day at a time. Come on. We wake up in the morning and we're ready to shine. Hey. It's a natural high, and that's a matter of fact. Come on. We know deep inside there's nothing we lack. Come on. We live in the moment, cause that's where it's at. Come on. It works when you're working, so keep coming back. Hey. So there you have it, steps 1 through 12. Remember, you don't have to step alone. We step together one day at a time. And no matter what, we keep coming back. So until the next time, peace in, peace out.